Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Hello and welcome to episode 168 of We Are Going Up. And I'm going to play in this music, David Cameron Walker, because you're back. You're back from the US of A.
I am.
Are you in one piece?
I am in one piece, yeah.
You're alive, you had a good time.
I had a great time.
Didn't get too drunk.
I didn't get too drunk most of the time.
Right, good.
I basically acted like a big kid for about a week. I went to Disney World. I met the genie from Aladdin, got a selfie with him, danced with Sebastian the Crab, met Rafiki from the Lion King, Mickey Mouse, did all the things you'd expect of anyone rampaging around Disney World.
Amazing. So this is episode 168. Now, it's slightly different to how we anticipated it, we should say. And it isn't
Why
your
is that,
fault.
Mark?
I'm going to put this out there. This is not your fault. So basically, we recorded the show last night in full.
And a very good show, I thought, as well.
Yeah. Well, you're going to hear most of it.
Yeah.
The way it works is that, obviously, I'm in Manchester, you're in London. I record my half of the conversation, you record your half, and then through the wonders of modern technology and some editing software that I've got, we put it together and it all sounds great, usually. However, last night I recorded the show in my car, which is a bit of a mistake, because I didn't realise that when I recorded my half of the conversation, there was going to be the phone interference all the way through. So I hold my hands up and I'm now going to play you a little clip of how the intro to the show sounded as we recorded it last night, just so you can hear how unbearable it will be to listen to. Hello and welcome to episode 168 of We Are Going Up. It's a Friday night slash weekend treat for you, popping into your app of choice, your podcast app of choice. I'm Mark Crossley in the north and very much in the south is David Cameron Walker, and you're back.
I am back in one piece, safe and sound.
Right, so that's how it sounded last night.
Yeah.
Not great.
That wouldn't have been fun, would it, for an hour?
Wouldn't have been fun for me to edit it for a few hours and you to listen to it for an hour. I mean, your bits are fine. So whenever you talk and the callers we had on were great.
But all that great stuff. We had some great chats, just me
we
and
did.
You at the
we
end.
We talked about... We
it's gone
about...
forever. Consigned
well,
to the cutting
the thing
room
is we could
floor.
Play it, but it would just be you talking to thin air. Which would be quite amusing. We talked about the England Euro 96 team and how they've all made dreadful managers.
Terrible. All terrible
just
managers.
Obviously,
tell you what we did talk about. We talked about Neil Warnock, didn't we?
We did talk about Neil Warnock.
We talked about him possibly getting the Rotherham job and I said he should retire.
You did.
What happened an hour after we finished recording?
He got the Rotherham job.
He got the Rotherham job.
Yeah. Can't keep a good man down, mate. So we talked about that.
I stand by my sentiments. What's he doing? Just go back to Cornwall, for Christ's sake. You don't need it.
You and Alan Brazil, Neil. That's all you need for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
We also talked about Leicester City and how we were both watching that game separately on Saturday and how we basically, if Leicester win the Premier League, we're just going to shut up shop and go out because it's just... And we're going to get Jim Knight on. If they get close to it.
Jim Knight's going to come back. We're going to call it a day because what we completed everything.
Yeah, exactly. So
we've reached the pinnacle.
I mean, mate, essentially we've summed up what we did there in about 90 seconds. But
yeah. We talked a bit about Lee Johnson.
We did. We're going to talk a lot about Lee Johnson now.
Bristol City fans.
From the Bristol City side of it,
Not entirely enamoured initially with the appointment because they didn't necessarily really like him too much in the latter days of his spell as a player at Ashton Gate. He was very much seen as kind of one of the symbols of the decline, being that he was the manager's son, Gary Johnson's son, when it was all going wrong and he was still in the team every week. However, they won their first game under him and I think they've got to get behind him from now to the end of the season. I think they will if they're going to stay up.
Absolutely. So we talked about all that last night. You also had a pop at me for recording on the top floor of an empty car park. and we're asking some serious questions.
You can't beat your horn this time,
I can't,
can you?
I beat my horn to the du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du-du. Well, I might even, if I can find that and salvage the audio, I'll play it in there.
All right.
Hear that?
Do it.
There you go. That's it. Thanks for listening. We'll speak to you. And if you didn't hear that, that's because we couldn't find it.
Yeah.
And if you did hear it, I hope you enjoyed it. Right, so we've done our best then. So what we're going to do is we're going to play you just basically the three interviews that we did last night.
Yeah. Bloody good interviews. That's what they are.
If we do say so ourselves. So coming up later on, you're going to hear from, well, fans of the two sides that have made it to the JPT final in April. We've got Oxford United, third in League Two. George Dugdale from BT Sport, big Oxford fan, will come on to talk about their season and getting to Wembley, and also Barnsley. Lee Johnson's gone. Well, they're at Wembley as well, and they're doing, well, they're flying in League One at the minute. So we're going to speak to Doug O'Kane, sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle. So that's coming up. But first, we're going to start with Jonathan Rogers from the Facing Two Ways blog. What was that noise?
What noise?
I just heard a ridiculous noise.
More technical difficulties. Your end.
What was that?
I don't know. I didn't hear anything.
I've no idea.
You're going
Sorry.
Mad.
I have been awake since 3:45 this morning. But anyway, Jonathan Rogers from the at Popsider blog.
No.
At Popsider.
No, you've got it all wrong.
Mate, take over this.
He's at Popsider on Twitter, and his blog is called Facing Two Ways.
That's the one.
Because anyway, he supports Derby, but he lives in Watford, so he sort of also likes Watford and watches them from time to time. Right. That's why it's called Facing Two Ways.
Got you. Well salvaged. So Paul Clements left this week after 33 games in charge, sacked by the club. There's lots. He made the national press. Lots of stories about it. You know, not being promotion the aim this season. All this kind of thing. So we spoke to Jonathan about this, and we started by asking him, well, how he felt when he heard the news that Paul Clement had lost his job earlier this week.
I mean, we had sort of felt something had gone wrong since Boxing Day. We're atop of Boxing Day, so but we hadn't won in seven games since then, and there were rumblings of things going on behind the scenes, and there are some. The chairman had been into the dressing room after one of the defeats and had a rant at the players. So we knew something was going on, but I was at the Fulham game on Saturday, and it seemed to have sort of stabilised. We were playing okay. There were some positive signs. He was changing the side around, and he said he had the support of the chairman. So I think it was a shock for everyone, really. I mean, even the fans who thought he was not the right man for Derby still expect them to be given a few more games, and a lot of us just expect them to be carrying on to the end of the season, at least to see how far we got. So I think all of the media as well as the fans were just shocked and flabbergasted, and it's probably got worse since then.
I wasn't that surprised, because I'd read your blog, one you did after, it was after the Preston game, and I'd heard a few bits and bobs in the last month or so that there was, you know, slight rumblings of discontent amongst some sections of the fan base.
Yeah.
And I was actually having a conversation with some friends who said, oh, Derby have sacked their manager. That's a bit strange, isn't it? And I sort of said, well, I mean, this is before I'd read the statement. I'd just seen the news. And I said, well, you know, they've spent a lot of money in the summer. They've slipped slightly in the table. It's a big deal to get up next season because of the increased TV money and all that. And I'm sure they're just being ruthless, and rightly or wrongly, they've sat the manager with the aim of getting promotion in mind, because promotion at all costs this season. But then you read the statement from the hierarchy there, and that's what surprised me.
Yeah.
If we are to believe their words, it's nothing to do with promotion.
Yeah.
It's because he wasn't playing the right kind of football.
Well, I mean, the thing that sort of made me feel quite negative and worried about the future is actually the statement that came out when he was sacked, and every single statement since. I mean, he spent the whole of yesterday and the day before giving interviews to the press like it was all prepared, and all of that, he was saying things like promotion's not a priority, we always said it wasn't a priority, and we always said that the important thing was to have played the Derby way, which is something that no one's really ever heard of before. McLaren mentioned it once in his first season as sort of a suggestion that Derby were playing some attacking, free-flowing passing football, but we've not heard of that before this season, and none of the fans really recognise that as a real thing. And the statements have been increasingly ludicrous and quite flabbergasting, really. I mean, I'm using all these strange words to describe it, but it is.
If you were top of the league, if you were top, playing exactly the same football, and you were top, yeah, there's no way they would have got rid of him, surely.
Exactly. I mean, the football's been a bit. Occasionally, it's been really, really poor. But in the first few games, we struggled, and I think Clement was a fan of possession football. Maybe he's got that from his time coaching in Spain. But you know, and he was very cautious, and sometimes he made the wrong decisions with substitutions and team selections. But there were some excellent performances. Not completely consistent throughout the season, but you can't. I did a thing on my blog on Boxing Day when we were top, and it was fine. People were generally happy. It came across very well in the media. The chairman seemed happy, and something appears to have happened behind the scenes, because we probably won't know what it is, but I'm sure there's been some falling out. But the chairman's comments just don't. Nobody can understand them, and they come across as increasingly illogical, really. So it's very difficult to work out what's going on.
I know that Clement hadn't been there for a particularly long time. I think just 33 games in total. What was the sort of fans' view on him? Do you think the majority of fans feel he's been harshly done to, or because of this winless run recently and the fact that perhaps they were, you know, you were slipping slightly behind in the promotion race, that fans feel that this change might not be the worst thing?
Yeah, I think in terms of the fans, I think there's a small minority who perhaps didn't think he was good enough from the start. There's a senior to Geldo who sits next to me, a good friend of mine who's never rated him and rates him as a former PE teacher from Sutton. And the style of play has sometimes been a bit cautious and a bit negative. And I think a lot of fans had concerns about the game since Christmas, including me, because some of the performances were just awful, and I felt pretty disengaged by it. And I've been following the team since the 80s, really, and I put a lot of commitment into it, and I just felt I was sitting in the stadium feeling disengaged and sort of uninterested, and the players were not looking interested. But I think the majority of fans I've seen a few polls since, and it's sort of three quarters of fans were shocked, and the majority of fans felt it was the wrong decision to sack him. And I think probably since then, given the statements from the owner afterwards, I think perhaps people are just getting increasingly concerned and thinking, well, the more we hear from the chairman, the more sympathy Clement gets, the more he sounds hard done by, the more he sounds like he was on a hiding to nothing from the start. Because I mean, he did pretty well by Christmas, by Boxing Day. He were top of the league. He was, you know, in the first few months of his first job as a number one, and he was doing okay. It is sort of completely illogical.
And what do you think about the decision to immediately announce that Darren Wassell is going to be in charge for the rest of the season?
Again, that was one of the strangest things from the initial statement. And since then, Wassell is a guy who's been running the academy for a long time, and he's got had a lot of credit for that, and he's got a very good reputation for that. But he's only got 45 minutes experience of being a manager of Derby, and that was after McLaren was appointed, and he was in charge for the first game. McLaren was in the stands. And we're 4-1 down at half time. McLaren took over, put Eustace on, changed the formation, and we're 4-4 by the end of the game. So the rest is history. So he's always going to have that on his back, really. And again, the illogicality of it is that if Morris felt he needed to make a change, you would have thought he'd had someone in mind to start, and you would have thought he'd had someone as a backup to sort of take over, and you would think he'd be talking about, well, we've got chance, we've got 19 games to go, and we're going to go all out for promotion with someone perhaps who's got experience, someone who's got knowledge of this division. And instead, we've got an under 21 manager, head of the academy, and we don't know what's going to happen. He's repeated in the press today that he's going to stay until the end of the season. He's not looking at recruiting any manager. He's not putting any process in place to recruit a new manager. But it's difficult to actually believe what he's saying about that.
And I think it's very interesting to look at this particular part of the whole situation, because you have been linked with Nigel Pearson, but those reports today have been quashed. Yeah. David Moyes was in the stands for the game at the weekend against Fulham. Now, David Moyes isn't a manager that necessarily would fit with this so-called derby way that Mel Morris is talking about. Not Nigel Pearson... Pearson might be a bit closer to it, but still not exactly Pep Guardiola, the second coming of Pep Guardiola. Yeah. But however, if either of those two turned up at the iPro next week, with the squad of players you've got, I mean, just looking at the players that you brought in the summer, you know, Baird, Darren Bent, Scott Carson, Andrew Vyman, Tom Ince, Jason Shackle, Jacob Butterfield, Bradley Johnson, Nick Blackman in January.
Yeah.
I mean, you spent huge money on a lot of players there with Premier League experience and good, really, really good players for the Championship, whether you can question their hunger and how much money they're on and all that. But if you had a proper manager who knew what he was doing, you'd have to think that Pearson, in particular, with his recent track record, could get those players up this season.
Certainly. I mean, part of the problem, I think, has been some of the players, for whatever reason, haven't been playing. I mean, the body language has been awful on the pitch.
I didn't even mention any of the players that were already there.
Yeah. So we do theoretically have a great squad, so... You would think that any owner worth his salt, and knowing what bountiful riches are available in the Premier League from next season, I mean, there's riches there enough already, but, you know, you would think he'd be planning ahead. I mean, he's no fool. He's one of the richest people in the country. So why hasn't he got a plan in place? It just seems something's happened, and he's made a snap decision to get rid of Clement without thinking about what's going to happen next. And that is not really what we expected of him. When he first became chairman and owner, he came across really well, really down-to-earth, really common-sense approach to things. But since then, everything he's said has been complete and utter nonsense, to be fair.
It must be incredibly frustrating to be a Derby fan, because I'm just thinking back to a couple of years ago, you know, playoff final, last minute, you miss out so cruelly on promotion, last season going so well, and then you blow up with a few months to go. This season, promotion favourites, really, you know, impressive new managers, been at Chelsea, Real Madrid, going well, then you wobble, then he sat. It just feels to be like you're almost nearly there, but something always goes wrong.
Yeah, to be honest, in my life as a supporter, it's probably been the same way. I mean, I started off watching them when Peter Taylor came back in 1982-83, and that was like a chance for redemption after years of failure for us. And it's been up and down since then, and we've nearly been bankrupt a few times. But you know, after that playoff final, and that season where we nearly got up in the playoffs, it's a lot of fans, including me, are thinking of that as a golden period where we did play great football, where we had a management team who had links to the club and clearly loved the club, and we were going in the right direction. And after that, it just went, something went wrong last season, and you would think everything was going for us this season with, you know, a rich benefactor who's a local man, and the logic of spending £25 million, and he was saying, well, you know, we can be patient about things, we don't need to get promotion this season, Paul's got a job, and even if we don't get promotion, and then it's all gone to pot. And you tend to think maybe it's something wrong with the club, maybe there's something deeply wrong and dysfunctional inside the club that we don't know about that's stopping us. But as it stands at the moment, we don't really know. It's going to be interesting on Saturday to see what happens, but who knows what happens next. How long is Wassell going to stay? You don't know.
So that was Jonathan Rogers, the author of the Derby County blog, Facing Two Ways, and also at Popsider on Twitter, talking to us about the club's decision to let go Paul Clement, who is leaving the iPro Stadium, and Derby move on. And so do we, because in just a minute, we're going to talk to fans of the two sides who have made it to Wembley. Well, we're going to speak to an Oxford fan anyway, George Dugdale, who works for BT Sport and also the sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle, Doug O'Kane, ahead of the JPT final at the start of April, and also to find out more about the departure of Lee Johnson from the Tykes. That's next.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Okay, so the big game at Wembley, what, just under 2 months away, but we know it's going to be between Barnsley and Oxford to win the first piece of silverware for a Football League side this season in the Johnson's Pate Trophy Final 2016. Coming up, George Dugdale from BT Sport, big Oxford fan, on their season under Michael Appleton. But first, interesting story at Barnsley. They're in a great run now. Wasn't like that a few months ago. Lee Johnson under big pressure. Everyone thought he could lose his job. Well, he has left now, but in completely different circumstances, to take over at Bristol City and with Barnsley on their way to Wembley. Doug O'Kane is the sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle. He joined me in DC last night when we recorded this initially, and I started by asking him what his reaction was during the week when he found out the news that Lee Johnson had decided to leave the club and take over at Bristol City.
I think it was definitely a surprise. I mean, 2 months earlier, or even just before Christmas, there'd been constant rumours, well, speculation for weeks and weeks about will he get sacked. And that's been the majority of the season. He's been, I know, reasonably close to that. And then he's had this unbelievable run of 6 wins in a row, obviously, in the league, obviously side by side with getting to Wembley in the Johnston Paints Trophy. And suddenly he's, instead of being booted out the door, he leaves out of the door for a higher club in a higher league, and it's amazing, really. In terms of Bristol City, there had been a bit of a rumour about it for the last week or so, and I think most of us knew there was no smoke without fire, and that they probably were interested. Whether I think a lot of the guys down there in the media didn't necessarily think they'd come in for Lee maybe as one of their top choices, but obviously they did. I believe he had quite a good relationship with the owner of Bristol City from his playing days there, and obviously his dad is well respected there, so it is a move that made sense. But it was a surprising and surreal 12 hours getting to Wembley in the JPT at Fleetwood, with the way it happened with the penalty shootout, and then suddenly wake up in the morning and he's going down to Bristol City to eventually join them the next day. So it makes sense when you think about it, but at the time, yeah, it was just the latest twist in what's been a very up and down season.
Yeah, to say the least, it's been absolutely mad. I mean, were the fans disappointed to see Johnson go?
I think so, yeah, because he'd won a lot of them round in the last couple of months with the form. I mean, you can't really argue with it, to be honest. And I think overall, 5 points off the playoffs in February with some good form, I think it's not a fantastic season, but it's an acceptable season, especially with the Wembley final. So you'd have to say he was doing reasonably well. If you mean disappointed in terms of do they feel let down by him, I think maybe a few do, but I think the majority understand that it was a club that had a very special place in his heart. It's a club in the higher division, and he's an ambitious manager, and who knows, he could have gone on another bad run with Barnsley the next season, and possibly they wouldn't have shown him that loyalty again. You know what football's like, and he could never have had this opportunity again. So I think most people would understand why he's done it. And generally, I think he's been a sort of very up and down time at Barnsley for Lee, but he's left on a massive high. He's the first person to ever take them to a Wembley Cup final, so he's got a special place in the club's history, even though obviously fans would prefer it to be a more high-profile competition.
We'll come on to the Wembley final in just a minute, but I'm intrigued by what you said about it being an up-and-down season. I'm just looking at the results from October. I believe it was 8 defeats in a row, and like you say, 6 wins in a row now. So I'm just intrigued as to why it sort of turned around so rapidly. What's been the catalyst for this recent run?
It's quite hard to say. I mean, that run that you mentioned, 8 in a row, in the league. It's the worst run since 1959, and it also included, not in in the FA Cup, it included at the same time a defeat to non-league Altrincham, which was arguably a low point, really, because Barnsley were really, really bad that day. A lot of the games that they lost, obviously the results weren't acceptable, but their performances weren't that bad. The FA Cup defeat, they were awful against a non-league side, and Barnsley had their full-strength team out. And that period around late October, early November, he was hanging on by a thread, I think, Lee, to be honest. But they stuck by him. And then what turned it around, I think, a variety of factors. I think that the run in the Johnson Page Trophy helped a lot. The fact that they had this Wembley, this carrot of Wembley, potentially, and just the way they went through the rounds, they won a couple of penalty shootouts, but they really showed character and a bit of resolve, and I think that brought them together as a group and gave them confidence. Adam Hamill is a massive, massive factor in it. He obviously played for Barnsley about 5 years ago now, and he returned right at the end of that eight-match run. He scored the winner against York in the JPT, and then went on to, well, he's been assisting and scoring quite a few goals ever since then, and just he's added a bit of leadership. I mean, he's one of the oldest players at 27, and he's added experience, and he's, in my opinion, too good for League One, and he's been a major catalyst because he just seems to have added that spark to the attack, and they weren't really scoring goals before then, and they've all played a lot better. There's been a couple of other signings as well. Kevin Long and AD White came into defence, really shored it up. Long's now going to go back to Burnley after this weekend, so that's a bit of a blow, but just a few experienced signings. And also, I think it was just a freak run that that team probably wasn't bad enough to lose eight games in a row, but they did, just through those various bits of luck and refereeing decisions and individual mistakes. And they've always had decent players for League One, like Sam Winnell. Obviously, he's got 17 goals this season now, 10 in 7 in the league. Conor Hourihan, who's really, really impressed me and improved this season, I think. And a couple of others as well who have started to really come to the fore, like Marley Watkins, James Bree, and the goalkeeper, Adam Davis. And so it's been a combination of all those factors, really.
Now, they started life without Lee Johnson in the best possible way. And Mark, I'm sure you won't want to be reminded, but a 3-0 victory over Bury at the weekend. And the chief exec said he's in no rush to appoint a permanent manager. Do you think we'll see that till the end of the season then with Heckenbottom and Tommy Wright?
I think if everything goes well, yes. My feeling is, based on a few conversations, is it's sort of, to put it in quite a crude way, it's theirs to lose, really. I think if they keep the momentum going, I'm not saying they have to repeat 7 wins in a row all the time. Obviously, that's impossible. But if they keep, you know, regular wins and pushing up the table and challenging for the playoffs, I think Paul Heckingbottom is a definite candidate. He's from Barnsley. He played for Barnsley. Everyone at the club loves him. The fans they like him. He was in the team that got promoted from League One as a player last time, 10 years ago. He scored a penalty in the playoff final when they won on penalties against Swansea. And he seems a good fit. He just seems like the right person at the moment. Obviously, I think he'll definitely get the next 3 or 4 games. Obviously, if they start losing again and it just doesn't seem to be working, then, yeah, they might get someone else in. Or certainly look to get someone else in the summer if that's the case. But I think it's an audition for Paul at the moment. And we'll see how he does with that. But I think it would be crazy right now on 7 games in a row, 7 wins in a row, to make any changes, to be honest. If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, and just keep going with the winning formula.
Some rumours about Neil Redfern, who seems to have done a bit of a Yorkshire tour recently in terms of the teams that he's managed. He obviously used to play for Barnsley. Would there be any potential in that move?
I think he would be one of the names, you know, who would be seriously considered if they do decide to bring in someone external. But they haven't met anyone else. They don't have plans to meet anyone else. I believe the chief executive is actually on a golfing holiday for the next week. So that shows how relaxed they are in terms of the immediacy of any appointments. So I think it's definitely Paul Heckingbottom's for the next 3 or 4 weeks. Neil Redfern, obviously a massive legend at the club, and he's got some experience now. And so he will be a candidate if there is a new, if there is going to be an external appointment, along with a few others, I would have thought. And I'm sure if that is the case, he probably would be interviewed. He's always being linked, and it does seem quite timely that he's left now, left Rotherham now. But I don't think they're looking at him at the moment. Like I say, I think it's Paul Heckingbottom to lose.
Right then, Wembley. How are you feeling about it? You're obviously playing Oxford United, a team who are having a good season themselves, but obviously Barnsley are a division higher. Oxford have impressed in the FA Cup this season with some good players that have caught the eye. But are Barnsley fans confident going into this match?
Yes, I think so. I mean, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert about Oxford. I don't know too much about them, but obviously they are a good team, doing very well in their league, and it'll be a tough game, I think. All the cliches apply of 90 minutes, anything can happen. I think Barnsley probably, I would imagine, have a little bit more quality in their team. But being in League One and having, you know, being probably the form team of League One and maybe the Football League at the moment. But I think it'll be a tough match. And I think just everyone's just looking forward to it. And people are really delighted to go to Wembley. Obviously, once you're there, you want to win it. And sure, Barnsley are very confident that they can.
In terms of the numbers of fans we can expect to see travelling down to Wembley, how many do you think you'll get?
Well, they can have up to 40,000, and they've ordered an initial 25,000. And the way the chief executive explained it to me this week was that if they exceed that and they need another 5 or 10 or 15,000, then they can ask for them, and they'll be delivered within 48 hours. So they took 33,000 to the last playoff final at Cardiff. Obviously, that was a playoff final rather than the Johnstone Paints Trophy, but I think the draw of Wembley, I think it will be similar to that. It's very hard to tell. It's only been a week since they got there, but I think they'll exceed that 25,000 just, and it'd be maybe 30-ish.
And a final question, looking at the table, 5 points outside the playoff spots in 10th at the minute with a game in hand on a couple of the teams in the playoff spots. Do you think that's now got to be the ambition for whoever the new manager is to get in that top six?
Yeah, it's got to be the ambition, but it's still an outside chance. I mean, five points is with about, 16, 17 games to go is obviously not impossible, and Barnsley are on great form. I just think they need to keep this run going as long as possible. And if maybe they keep it going for the next month or so, then they'll be up there, and it's just a case of staying there. Any key injuries, as it probably is the case for any side, really, unless you've got a huge squad, would be very, very bad for Barnsley. Anyone like Winall or Hamill or Conor Hourihan getting injured would be a disaster. So they need them to stay fit, and they need a little bit of luck. Kevin Long's loan from Burnley is going to finish after Saturday's game at Gillingham. So whether someone could step up from within the squad, Louis Niatango or Mark Roberts, who have been on the bench, or they'll bring in a loanee, because that'll be very important, because Long has been massive for shoring up the defence. But to sum up, I suppose they can bridge that gap of 5 points, but it's just been such an up and down season that anything could happen. And they did the same last season. They won six in a row at this sort of time, and then really flattened out, and it was just quite a boring end to the season. They finished 11th. That's definitely a threat, but hopefully they'll keep it going, keep everyone fit, and keep playing the fantastic football of the last few games, and maybe they might have two trips to Wembley this season.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast.
So that was a sports editor of the Barnsley Chronicle, Doug O'Kane, on Barnsley reaching Wembley, their season, and of course Lee Johnson as well. Let's turn our attention to their opponents. Oxford United, third in League Two, back off to Wembley, managed by Michael Appleton, already knocked Swansea out of the FA Cup so far this season. George Dugdale is a big Oxford fan. We've had him on the show before. He works for BT Sport as well. And we caught up with George, and I said to him, Oxford United on their way to Wembley. How does that sound?
It sounds terrific. We've obviously done it before to get back into the Football League, but to do it kind of where I have a lot less pressure, is going to be a really enjoyable day for everyone.
You obviously caught the eye in another cup competition this season. The FA Cup win over Swansea in particular was with a chance where most of our listeners will have seen you play this season. And Kemar Roof was the big name on everyone's lips. I mean, how good has he been? But also, who have been the other stars of the team this season?
That was a day when the secret kind of went national, didn't it, really? He's a strange player in as much as quite often you have a game when he's not doing a lot and then they'll cut in off the wing corner from 30 yards and he's done his job. Alongside him, I think I've got to sing the praise of John Lundstrom. Came to us in a similar way to Roof in as much as he wasn't getting into the Everton team, whereas Roof wasn't getting into the West Brom team. And they figured that if they came lower down to play more football, as a footballer, they could work their way back up. So we've been the beneficiaries of that. And he's a really good kind of deep line playmaker. The game for us and gets the players we want, the ball, gets them on it, and that's been a massive part of our season.
And tell us a bit about how Michael Appleton has done at Oxford. Obviously, it's going very well so far this season, but he's a manager though who has been all over the place and never really settled at any one club for various reasons. Some because of his choice leaving, some not his choice. But he's at Oxford now and he's had a good time now to bed in and it's going well. And finally, we're starting to see the potential, I suppose, of a man who's been long touted as something special.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit of scepticism when he came in because he came in twinned with the takeover of and Gary Waddock left immediately when that happened. So he came in with Mark Ashton, who had been working with him at West Brom earlier in his career, and he said to us that he was going to be a special manager. He was really good. Don't look at his previous choices. Appleton came in and said he'd made some really poor decisions in the past, and this was a place where he was going to stay for a long period of time and rebuild his reputation. And it wasn't an easy start. He had to learn about League Two and learn what kind of players and what kind of football can do well for you in this division. But this year, we have really kicked on and we're playing some terrific football. We've relayed the pitch at the Kassam, which has made a big difference, and London Welsh have gone. So it isn't being carved up. We can keep the ball on the deck and it's really benefited us this year.
It's not just in the Cups that you've done well, as you say, third in the table. What do you make of the promotion race in League Two this season? A couple of strong sides up there with you, Plymouth in particular. Do you still feel that Oxford can get in that top three come the end of the season?
Yeah, it's got to the point now where I've stopped looking up and I'm looking at the gap below us. To be honest, if Northampton, Plymouth and Oxford are three that go up at the end of the day, I don't really care what order that happens in. We're having a great time regardless of whether we're third or first. And I think Plymouth were the best side I've seen this season. We beat them 1-0 at home, but they came and they played a similar game to us. They put the ball on the floor. They tried to work openings kind of in a style that is similar to a level far above this. Other sides come and they still put the ball in the box. They still do the League Two thing. But I think the three best sides in the league are in the promotion positions at the moment. So long may it stay that way.
Have you got your ticket for Wembley?
It's all booked. It's all done. We got through 7,500 today, which is just season ticket holders. We'll go on a general sale on Monday, which is when the fun will begin. I think we're confident that we can take more than we did to the conference player final, which was, I think, 30,000. So if we could fill our 40,000 we've taken now, it's going to be one hell of a day.
And I assume you weren't there in 1986 for the Milk Cup final.
I wasn't. That was a few years before I was born. But you hear the stories of it, and as an Oxford fan, it's obviously not on the same level. We're not the same club as we were back then, but any chance to go and play at Wembley and show what the club is all about now is something that we've got to embrace.
And I suppose if you look at last season's JPT, it might be a good omen. Bristol City winning it, and they obviously went on to get promotion, and they were facing a team who hadn't been to Wembley in a cup final before, that the same as Barnsley. However, this time it's kind of the other way round. You are obviously lower down the pyramid, you're a league below Barnsley. So in terms of that match, are you confident that you can? I mean, you've beaten a Premier League team this season, so you should be confident, I guess, of being able to beat Barnsley.
We've beaten a team from each of the top five leagues in England this season. So whatever league you're in, we will have a good. But I think our football is actually more suited to playing teams of a higher level, sides that don't really want to lump it into a box, that don't want to kick you off the park for 90 minutes. We're a passing side. We're not really equipped to play the long ball game. So sides that are willing to stand off us, kind of go head-to-head in a football match, it suited us better. So Swindon, Millwall, Swansea, Brentford, all of those, they've been beaten this season. So hopefully there's one more to come.
One thing I wanted to ask about, and forgive my ignorance on this issue, but I guess for a lot of people like me who, you know, sort of don't follow League Two that closely or haven't followed it that closely this season, a lot of the things
Look at you, eh?
I know.
Go up to League One and you forget all about
things
it.
Things have changed, haven't they? Might be back there the way we're going anyway. One of the things I do see a lot of is David Jones from Sky Sports News, obviously presents Saturday Night Football, tweeting a lot about Oxford. He's now involved behind the scenes at the club. Can you tell us any more about that?
He came in at the start of... Matt Moen towards the end of last season, actually, but he's been more involved in the last 12 months anyway. And it's through friendships with the chairman and the old chief executive. And it's just another kind of football mind to have on the board, someone with an understanding of the game, with contacts. And I think he's a Sunderland fan, but he's been really positive around Oxford. He's helping us out wherever he can. And I think it's been really welcome.
And one final question from me about the club, because I think we've talked about Oxford on this podcast, I mean, pretty much since we started it, I think, certainly the last 2 or 3 years, about Oxford being on the cusp of going up and things going wrong and changing manager and playoffs and all that kind of thing. Does this feel like the season?
This feels like a special season, and that's going to come back and bite me in May if it all goes wrong, but... We've been in good positions before, but even from pre-season this year, we went out to Austria and a load of fans went out there. And the club were really good at getting the players, the staff, all interacting with the fans. And this kind of one club mentality was formed there. And throughout this season, that's been evident. There was a time when an Oxford team couldn't lose a game without being booed off. You couldn't be losing at half time without getting stick. Now we lost 3-2 at home to Barnet. It's a game we really should have won. And the players are getting chanted and sung off the pitch. And it's a massive change. And I think there's a real feeling. We came up from the non-league. We were fairly well placed and we thought we could have gone up a couple of times. And then we plateaued. We got stuck in League Two. And it feels like we're actually kicking on again now. So I don't want to jinx it, but this feels like a really good team, a really good kind of atmosphere around the club. Great manager, great chairman. Touch wood, this is the one.
Breaking news, Derby County have appointed Michael Appleton as their new manager after he leaves Oxford just days before the Johnson Paint Trophy final.
Don't even joke about this.
I actually thought you did have some breaking news then. No, I was like, even by our standards, that's ridiculous. George, enjoy Wembley, mate. All the best. Thanks for coming on.
Never a problem.
You're listening to We Are Going Up. We've got the Football League covered.
Right, so that's it for this slightly curtailed episode of We Are Going Up.
So have you managed not to f*** this one up?
Now, do I have to bleep that?
I think so. Well, it's up to you.
I might, for comedic effect, I might just add a phone interference sound all the way under this. You know what? I'm half tempted to go back and just sort of play out bits of your side of the conversation with you talking to Noah, because it just sounds stupid. Anyway, right, that is it. And sorry about the slight technical difficulties this week.
But somewhere in London, there is a man locked inside what is essentially a padded room, talking to himself about the Johnson Paint Trophy final.
Yeah,
we're
absolutely
not sure whether he's wearing a straitjacket or not.
And you know what? I'm going to play some of that out at the end. I've decided after the end music. Right, that's it. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next time when both ends of this conversation will record properly. All the usual stuff. The Instagram. I actually posted a picture from my car on the Instagram, which is now wasted.
Redundant now.
At Waggy. Instagram.com/WaggyPodcast. Twitter is at Waggy Podcast. So is the Facebook page. The website with all the old stuff on, all the old interviews that did record properly, and all the old shows, the live shows. WeAreGoingUp.co.uk. And the documentary we did, all on there. That's it. Enjoy your weekends. Hope your team won or lost if you listen to this after Saturday afternoon, and we'll speak to you sometime soon. And stand by for a madman talking to himself.
This is the We Are Going Up podcast. We've got the Football League covered.
Yeah, very much so. Yep. Awful. Yep. Awful. Yep. Terrible. Yep. Yep. Gazza. Yep. The Chuckle Brothers to meet. to you. Well, it'll be interesting to see whether Warnock does indeed pitch up at the New York Stadium. oh, I love New York, me. Strange Instagram we have. If we end this season, right, with Leicester as Premier League champions and Watford in the top half of the league, I think we should...
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Regardless of anything else, we should give it up.